from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, despite a rough first quarter in Sunday's NFC Championship game, the San Francisco 49ers are headed for the Super Bowl for the first time in 18 years. They'll face off against the Baltimore Ravens in New Orleans early next month in a Super Bowl game that will be significant for another reason. It'll be the first time two brothers, Jim and John Harbaugh, will lead opposing teams in football's biggest game. We'll talk about Sunday's game and we'll preview Super Bowl 47. Forum is next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. For the first time since 1995, the San Francisco 49ers are headed for the Super Bowl after coming back from a 17-0 deficit to defeat the Atlanta Falcons 28-24 on Sunday in the Falcons' home stadium. The victory made the 49ers this year's reigning National Football Conference champions and provided them with the key to enter the Super Bowl in New Orleans on February 3rd and play against the AFC champion Baltimore Ravens. That matchup will put younger brother 49er coach Jim Harbaugh against his older brother, Ravens coach John Harbaugh, in a contest for the Lombardi Trophy that has already been dubbed the Harbowl. Oddsmakers are favoring the 49ers by 4.5 to 5 points. And in this opening Forum Hour, we discuss the big game this past Sunday and the bigger one coming up, the Super Bowl 47. I want to go first to Bob Lang, who is Director of Public Relations for the San Francisco 49ers, joining us by phone this morning. Bob Lang, good morning and congratulations.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me on the show this morning.
Glad to have you. And, euphoric, is that too mild a word to use?
Well, I think the immediate reaction was euphoric, but I'll tell you what, the intensity and resolve of this team quickly, almost as soon as we entered the locker room, people were already talking about they're having their eye on the main goal and the main prize, and that's the Lombardi Trophy.
Hey, you know, there was a good deal of talk, and some people are hoping we're going to see champions not only in baseball for San Francisco, but for football as well, about how this team has come together and how it's played as a team and how, just like with Hunter Pence, there's been a lot of players, and particularly now Kaepernick, getting the team to cohere and getting it to come together.
Well, I think that all comes down from the vision that was set by our owner, Jed York, our general manager, Trent Baalke, and our head coach, Jim Harbaugh. If you look at the way that Coach Harbaugh goes around managing this locker room and managing this team, it's always about the team, the team, the team, a line that he's borrowed from his college head coach, Bo Schembechler, who made that line famous at Michigan.
Too early to talk about another dynasty? Because people are talking about it.
Well, I think that is too early. I think if you spoke to anybody else in this building, we'd all say the same thing. It's one game at a time, and as Coach said the other day after the game, we set out into the postseason looking at the fact that we needed to win three Super Bowls, each playoff game being its own Super Bowl. And we've won the first two, and now we're going to the big game in New Orleans where we can share that wonderful experience with our fans worldwide.
We've seen too much hype about brother versus brother, do you think? Or is that really a part of what this whole script is turning out to be?
Well, I think you can understand the obvious storyline, and it was an obvious storyline when they first met in the regular season last Thanksgiving. But if you listen to Coach Harbaugh at his press conference yesterday, he does not want it to be about the Harbaugh brothers. He wants it to be about the two teams that have earned the right to play for the World Championship in New Orleans. And I think, that's obviously a question he's going to get a million times by the time the ball is kicked off two Sundays from now. But knowing Coach, he's going to stick to his guns and try to push the focus back on the players.
It's going to be a tough game against the Ravens, isn't it?
I think so. I think so. I think when you look at the track record of both teams, obviously the Ravens have done a tremendous job over an extended period of time of playing playoff caliber, championship caliber football. And then for the past two seasons, we've done the same. So I think fans will be treated to a great competitive game, and obviously two physical, hard-nosed, blue-collar style approaches to playing the game. Probably a throwback game, some people may call it.
Well, again, congratulations to you and to the whole 49ers franchise, and good luck in New Orleans.
I appreciate it, Michael. Thank you.
Bob Lang, he is Director of Public Relations for the San Francisco 49ers. Now let's talk to some sports writers and figure out if we can not only what happened on Sunday, maybe even particularly what happened in the first half of the game, but also what's going to be likely to happen as we head to New Orleans. And Killian's with us, sports columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle, former contributing writer to Sports Illustrated and Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area. Welcome, Ann Killian.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And Kevin Lynch is also here. He covers the 49ers for sfgate.com. Welcome, Kevin Lynch.
Thank you.
And we also want to welcome Mark Burdi, sports columnist with San Jose Mercury News and Bay Area News Group, and with us by phone this morning from down in the South Bay. Welcome, Mark Burdi.
Thank you. You mean they're two brothers coaching against each other in this game?
Yeah, you just discovered
that's
that
really
obscure fact, huh?
That's a good story.
Well, is it a story that's been overplayed, though, is the question that I asked Bob Lang. And certainly from Jim Harbaugh's standpoint, it seems to be one that's overplayed.
Yeah, well, that's part of the deal. Every story in every Super Bowl is overplayed, and this one will be, you know, times whatever. It's going to be interesting to watch both those guys. By a week from Friday, they're just, I don't know, they may be just throwing flamethrowers at the media for asking any more questions. And you know what? They're right. It is really about the teams, but it's still a good story.
Well, as long as we're on this just for the second, what do you make out of the fact that the younger brother, Jim, said, my brother's, I'm not half the coach my brother is?
Well, they played last year on Thanksgiving Day, and the Ravens pretty much had their way with the 49ers. They won 16-6, and it probably wasn't as close as the final score.
Yeah, well, they were supposed to be a bit more tired because of Thanksgiving week, and Alex Smith was quarterback. There are certainly a lot of excuses for why that game was lost by the 49ers, but this will be a very different matchup, won't it?
Well, yes, there are different characters involved. The 49ers have a new quarterback, obviously, and they have a Hall of Fame-to-be receiver, Randy Moss. There are some different players involved. But I do think, look, do you have a brother?
I do. An older brother.
Okay, well,
I'm half the man he is in many ways, too.
If your brother beats you once, that's in your head. And you know, I think that'll play a part in the psychology of the game.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the psychology of the game with Ann Killian. I mean, you said, and I think I'm getting your language correctly here, 18 years of frustrating football just really kind of tumbled down.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time. This is a team that used to go to the Super Bowl all the time. It was their birthright, right? They had a dynasty going, and they were, if not in the Super Bowl, really close for years and years and years, for almost two decades worth. And it's been a long, 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 frustrating stretch. And what Jim Harbaugh has done in the less than 24 months he's been with this team is pretty amazing. I mean, he got them one step away last year. That happened, as many of them said after the game on Sunday, kind of too fast. You know, they were just kind of stunned to be in the position they were in. And it still took a fumble in overtime for them not to make the Super Bowl. And now here they are in the Super Bowl finally. And I think it's been a remarkable turnaround.
Well, speaking about Jim Harbaugh, you said maybe we saw the real Jim Harbaugh when there was 1 minute left in that game, when he was rallying everybody to come back on the field.
Yeah. Don't get a penalty for running around with your helmets off. I mean, that's Jim Harbaugh. He's a phenomenal coach. I mean, he micromanages every moment of everything. He micromanages the locker room. Everything he says is controlled. He's never been in a Super Bowl as a player or as a coach. So I think he's going to find that the next 2 weeks, a lot of things are going to be out of his control because it is an overhyped event. You can't ignore the brother story, and it's a great story. And as my colleague Ron Krawczyk wrote this morning in the Chronicle, it's a chance to humanize a guy who often resists being humanized. You know, it's a really cool, lovely story, but he doesn't want to participate. But it's still, you know, with or without his participation, it's going to be a major theme.
And we can finally say, even though it's been only 9 games, that we can be true believers about Kaepernick.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was not on board with the move just because I didn't like the way it happened. But, you know, I think we all knew Kaepernick was the future of this team. We just didn't know the future was right now. And for him to I saw him lose on the road in St. Louis and in Seattle, and he was rattled and he looked young. But what he's done in his wins have been amazing. The way he's responded in the playoffs has been truly amazing. And for him to, you know, run out there as the defense was putting up their last stand against the Falcons and say to his defense, hey, this is for the Super Bowl. That's a pretty amazing thing to say in your ninth start as a professional. I mean,
it's what I call the Hunter Pence effect.
Yeah, way more so, because he's making this happen. Hunter Pence was a nice story, but he really didn't have much to do with the Giants winning the World Series except for rallying them in the dugout. In terms of on-the-field play, Kaepernick has been so cool and so businesslike and so, you know, just doesn't seem to feel the pressure at all. And for someone that young, and let's face it, I mean, everyone says, well, he was overlooked in college overlooked in the draft, but he had a great college career. Well, he had a great college career at Nevada. He's never played with the spotlight on him at all. And all of a sudden, you know, he's taken his team to the Super Bowl. It's really been remarkable.
It's an extraordinary story. And what about that defense, Kevin Lynch? I mean, there were a lot of people who were pretty disappointed the first half. And Atlanta had some pretty great receivers and all. But when you look at the game and you see Akers failing another kick, you see a fumble by Michael Crabtree at the 1 yard line, or at least the ball knocked out of his hands, and the defense secondary not necessarily doing the job that's expected of one of the leading defense teams in the whole National Football League. Some say, gee, you know, that's not the 49ers Super Bowl type of victory team that we want.
Well, you know, it's interesting. This team has really changed, I think, within the last month or so, and they've become, before they were very defense oriented. And they were winning games by holding teams under 2 touchdowns. Now, that formula has changed, particularly with Kaepernick at quarterback, where the defense is starting to give up a lot of points and a lot of yards. And this team has come from being a defensive-oriented team to more of an offensive-oriented team. Whether that will play out in the Super Bowl, we don't know. But certainly within the last 4 or 5 weeks, that's been the way it's been.
Well, let's talk about the Super Bowl, because we're talking about how outstanding Kaepernick has been. Joe Flacco is pretty outstanding, too.
He is, and he's been a guy who's really stepped it up in the playoffs, and he's playing in a contract year. He doesn't have a contract next year, so maybe that's part of his motivation. But he's similar to Kaepernick in that they both have very strong arms, maybe the two strongest arms in the league. He doesn't run as well as Kaepernick. He doesn't bring that element. And he's also more of a veteran. I mean, as Ann mentioned, Kaepernick has just started 9 games for the 49ers. So it'll be interesting to see how they use Kaepernick in this Super Bowl, whether they're going to use him as a runner as well as a passer like they did against Green Bay, or just a passer as they did, as we saw on Sunday in the championship game.
Well, the Falcons, stopped the running game that we saw against Green Bay.
They did. They sealed off Kaepernick's lanes, and that opened it up in the middle for Frank Gore. And let's not underestimate Frank Gore's importance to this team, because talk about a guy who's really carried this team on his back for 8 years. And it's cool to see a guy like that who had so many horrible losses and frustrations to be in the position that he's in. The other interesting thing about the Ravens is that, you know, we talk about Jim Harbaugh's big gamble switching quarterbacks in early November, but John Harbaugh made an almost equally big a gamble. He fired his offensive coordinator in early December. Nobody does that. I mean, that was just random, like crazy. And he also almost had a mutiny on his team, and he's had to fight through a lot of things too. So both of these brothers have had an interesting, not exactly smooth path to their big Super Bowl matchup.
As long as we're talking about switches with the Ravens, I have to get in here as an old Cleveland Browns fan. It still kind of bothers me when I see that patch for Art Modell on the Ravens uniforms.
Yeah.
I mean, Art Modell may be more hated even than LeBron in Cleveland.
Oh, absolutely, right?
Yeah, well,
with good reason. With good reason. I'm an Ohio native too. I know how you feel. My wife is from Parma, from a Cleveland suburb. And we do not speak the name of Art Modell in our house.
Well, Mark Purdy, you kind of thought that the secret weapon here, at least in Sunday's game, was maybe Jax?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, we're talking about the Harbaugh family, but, you know, the story of the San Francisco 49ers, at least since the late 70s, has been the story of the DeBartolo York family. It's really a great family saga, you know, this older.
Also an Ohio family.
Yes, an Ohio family from Youngstown, Ohio. And, you know, the patriarch of the family, Edward DeBartolo Sr., buys this team and has his son, Eddie Jr., take it over and run it. And then, you know, he gets in legal trouble, and then it turns over to the other side of the family with his sister and her husband. And then now the son is running it. And then this was a really sweet story, I thought. During the game Sunday, when the 49ers are falling behind 17-0, Jed York is a much calmer guy than his uncle Eddie DeBartolo was, and he at least on outwardly. But Jed said after the game, told me, you know, he was just getting overwrought. He was just, you know, bouncing off the walls in the booth. He was so upset about the team falling behind. And then he looked down and saw his three-month-old son. He and his wife Danielle had their first kid a few months ago, and just reached down and picked him up and found that calmed him down. And while he was holding the baby and so forth, the 49ers scored their first touchdown. So he wondered if he should even put the kid down the rest of the game, but it turned out that he and his wife kept holding Jax the rest of the game, and the 49ers came back and win. And so Jed had said he thought this was the best, greatest football game he'd ever seen. Jed's only, 31, 32 years old?
32.
I'm not sure about that, but it's the best football game Jax York has ever seen at 3 months old.
Well, as long as we're talking about the DeBartolo family, let me get your take on, and we can hear also, obviously, from Kevin and Ann on this if they want to put in. Eddie DeBartolo is up for the Hall of Fame. In fact, we were talking about just a few weeks ago, Barry Bonds and Sammy Sosa and so forth. And, you know, he may make the Hall of Fame, but at the same time, he's got this mark against him, and he's going back to Louisiana, in fact, where that mark began,
yeah,
because of riverboat gambling. One has to ask, are the scandal days behind him?
Well, here's the other twist, too. Art Modell is up in the round of finalists, too. You know, so you've got Art Modell and Eddie DeBartolo being talked about in that room where a bunch of sports writers gather. I'm not one of them, and I don't think Ann or Kevin is either, and they talk about who should be in the Hall of Fame. So they'll be talking about both Art Modell and Eddie DeBartolo. You know, I thought last year Eddie might have had a chance. Things were kind of lined up, and the person making the presentation about Eddie, I know, did a good job. But I guess, and I understand there were in the room, we're not supposed to know what goes on in the room, but all three of us here have friends who are in that room, and so stuff does kind of leak out. And there wasn't a lot said against Eddie in that room, but just somehow he didn't get the votes in the end. I don't know what. I think it's kind of a messy setup the way they do it. I like it better with the Baseball Hall of Fame, where they have so many people vote, so you don't have like one or two people, or even five or six can keep somebody from out. I don't know what's going to happen this time. You're right. I don't know. I hadn't thought about, will we be writing stories about Eddie? And I covered that trial in Baton Rouge. That was a interesting thing, but he did. But I advocated that he should be in the Hall of Fame because, look, when they found out about this, he worked with the government. He put the governor of Louisiana in jail, helped do that. And there are other scalawags in the Hall of Fame who've had much worse things happen. You know, heck, Art Rooney, the patriarch of the Pittsburgh Steelers, was a big gambler and won the team in a card game, I think.
Well, in fact, Ann Killian, that's what your colleague Bruce Jenkins said here on the air. You think about all the, in baseball, you think about people who are in the Hall of Fame, then look at that. Bonds had an outstanding, extraordinary career. So
gambling,
Well, Pete Rose has never made it into the Hall of Fame.
Right. I mean, are we going to have that discussion again?
No.
I don't think people who use performance-enhancing drugs should get into the Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame. I do think that Eddie will be – that whether people say it or not, and Mark's right, it's a very opaque process getting into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's kind of troubling that way. There's a very small voting body. Nobody really knows what goes on. And so it's the prejudices of the – what is it, about 40 or –
Yeah,
45
yeah.
voters.
It needs to be a lot more.
And I think that they will hold that against Eddie, especially this vote, because it will be in Louisiana and it will be on people's minds. I think there's other 49ers. I talked to Eddie about this before the game, and Charles Haley was on the field as well as an honorary captain. Charles Haley really needs to be in the Hall of Fame. He has 5 Super Bowl rings. And Eddie definitely was lobbying for Charles. Eddie says, I don't think I'll get in while I'm alive. I don't know if that's true or not, but I kind of have a feeling it's not yet his turn, that there's some other players from those dynasties that will probably get in before Bill Walsh obviously got in immediately. And he is, you know, as much as anyone, as much as Eddie is considered responsible. So I think Eddie is putting his energies into lobbying for Charles.
Well, I think Eddie deserves to be.
Kevin Lynch, yeah, I was going to get some record in.
And for the reason that his gambling
in,
and what he did with the whole gambling situation down in Louisiana was completely divorced from NFL football. You know, Art Rooney, Pete Rose, they were involved in betting on their sports. Eddie was not. So this was a completely different deal outside of what the NFL is all about. And also, you know, his run of success and his recognition of talent, hiring Bill Walsh, getting Joe Montana in, which, of course, Walsh had a big hand in. Those 18 years where they were so successful is pretty much unprecedented. And I don't think Eddie really gets the credit he deserves for being the guy who brought that all together and for setting the tone for the organization, for making it a winning organization, and for bringing the best people in
and for
that he could possibly could.
Changing the NFL and getting a salary cap in.
Right. I
mean, we're in a deeper we're in a kind of a deeper question here, though, in some ways, if I may, because we're thinking about not only the fame that comes with owning a football team or managing a football team, but now, for example, we've got a matchup in terms of the Super Bowl. There's a lot of talk about Ray Lewis and Patrick Willis. Ray Lewis has gone, strangely enough, from accessory to murder to hagiography, you know, to sainthood, it seems, within one season. And Michael Crabtree, possible charges against him. I mean, all of these things sort of play into what we try to figure out as keeping the professional from the personal. Or
well, I don't mean this in any, you know, in any sort of I know it's probably going to come out wrong, but this is why the NFL is the best reality show on television. You have all kinds of people, and everything now gets written about, gets the spotlight shine on it, and this is going to be part of the storyline for the Super Bowl. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how much of a part of the storyline it becomes. But Ray Lewis has had, I mean, you could write three books about that guy's career. And I don't know. The guy was involved in a situation where somebody, you know, got shot and killed. So I don't know where he is now, and I don't know how much of this is an act and how much of it is sincere. But you know what? I'll have an opinion about it by the time the game comes around.
All right, we'll check you out then. In the meantime, let me invite our listeners to join us. In fact, this is a live and interactive program, and we'd like to hear from you if you have some thoughts not only about Sunday's big game, but and they're all Super Bowls, as we heard from Bob Lang, as far as the 49ers franchise is concerned, but also about the upcoming Super Bowl, questions or comments. Three leading sports writers with us, and you may want to join the conversation. Feel free to do that, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Again, your phone calls are welcome, so join the program. 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. Your responses, your impressions to the game on Sunday against the Atlanta Falcons, highlights that stay in your mind, or what you think about what's coming up as the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 47. With us in studio, Ann Killian, sports columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle, Kevin Lynch, who covers the 49ers for sfgate.com, and with us by phone is Mark Purdy, sports columnist with the San Jose Mercury News and the Bay Area News Group. We'll hear from you when we return. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Despite a rough first quarter in Sunday's NFC Championship game, the San Francisco 49ers are, for the first time in 18 years, headed for the Super Bowl. And the team was able to claw back in a striking distance, and by the fourth quarter, gained a slim lead against the Atlanta Falcons, which means the next stop is New Orleans, Louisiana. They'll face off against the Baltimore Ravens early next month in a Super Bowl game that will be significant for another reason, which we have talked about. Can't avoid it. first time two brothers, Jim and John Harbaugh, will lead opposing teams in football's biggest game. Commentators calling it Harbowl, and we're talking about that Super Bowl as well as the game that so many fans are excited about that took place on Sunday against Atlanta. Ann Killian with us in studio. She's sports columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. And Kevin Lynch, who covers the 49ers for sfgate.com. And with us by phone from down in the South Bay is Mark Purdy, sports columnist with the San Jose Mercury News and Bay Area News Group. And we spoke earlier with Bob Lang, director of public relations for the San Francisco 49ers. Let's go to your phone calls, and let's begin, Doug, with you. You're on the phone, Doug, on the line with us. Excuse me. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just following up on the Eddie D question because it seems to me the team is moving to Santa Clara because of Eddie D and everything that happened. He had a public financing deal for the Candlestick Point, and that never happened. And you get public financing in San Francisco, it's a big deal for a stadium. Anyway, I just wonder what the trio there thinks of that.
I don't think Eddie DeBartolo had anything to do, really, with the move to Santa Clara. He was long gone by the time that move was made. And it's a very complex situation why they are no longer moving to San Francisco. And a lot of it had to do with the city of San Francisco. So, and more to do with John York, his brother-in-law, than it had to do with Eddie DeBartolo.
Well, and I think in that way, it does trace back to Eddie because, yeah, there was an election, there was a public financing deal, but that doesn't mean it was ever necessarily going to happen. But right after that happened is when Eddie got in trouble, the transfer of ownership happened. It was a really sticky mess for several years there. I mean, Steve Young used to joke that he and Tim McDonald would sit around upstairs in the executive offices with their feet on the desks saying they were running the team because really there was no authority in charge. The team was kind of in limbo for several years. Then John York came in. He's not the most personable guy in the world. He and Gavin Newsom had a big falling out. And that's when he said abruptly he was going to change course and move to Santa Clara. So in that way, it's related to Eddie in that it all became part of the aftermath of the transfer of ownership. But then once Jed became the owner, he really understood that he felt that Santa Clara was the best option. And he worked very, very hard to get it done. And now the stadium is there. I mean, it's a done deal now.
Well, and I think John York, with his animosity towards Eddie, there was no way he was going to take Eddie's deal and go to San Francisco. Well, so I think the caller is right in that sense.
I think Kevin's right. It is more complicated. I think what the caller means is if Eddie had not gotten in trouble, the deal would have progressed. I don't know. I'm with Ann on that. I'm not quite sure that would have worked out. The money that San Francisco was contributing, remember there was supposed to be a mall there with the stadium. There were going to be problems with that. And ultimately, I think if Willie Brown were still the mayor of San Francisco, it probably would have had a better chance of getting done than the people who started running the city after Willie Brown, because remember, he was the mayor when that whole thing was passed. But in a nutshell, the 49ers did not get their phone calls returned very promptly from San Francisco, and Santa Clara picked up the phone on the first ring always, and they just decided that was a better deal.
I'm looking at a listener who sends an email about the York's decision to make Balke the GM, and he says, I applaud it. This may have led to our hiring Harbaugh in the first place, and I'm not sure that part of this design was to try to hire Andrew Card. Please ask your guests if this is a valid opinion.
Well, I think that—
Ann Killian.
I think that, Jed York at the time said Trent Balke was making the decision. Harbaugh, when he was hired, was the biggest name out there. Anyone who wasn't looking, it's kind of a no-brainer. Jed had to be the one to approve enough money to get Harbaugh to come. But it was, I think not only was Harbaugh the hottest name in coaching, people were in love with the storyline of him coming from Stanford, like Bill Walsh had. I mean, there was just a lot of things that felt right. And Harbaugh, when he was at Stanford, people were saying, oh, maybe he'll go to Michigan. Well, he was always going to the NFL. The guy's an NFL quarterback. He has NFL sensibility. His brother was an NFL coach and very successful. They're very competitive. So Harbaugh was always going to the NFL. And yes, technically, Trent Baalke hired him. And Trent Baalke has been an effective GM. But really, it was up to Jed and his parents to pay the money, and that's why Harbaugh came to the 49ers.
And Kevin Lynch.
Ann's absolutely right. I mean, Harbaugh was the shining star. Everybody wanted to hire Harbaugh. And in fact, the Miami Dolphins made a huge offer to him, much more than the 49ers offered. But Harbaugh's wife, apparently, who he met at Stanford, did not want to go to Miami. And I think Harbaugh realized, and this is why he's successful, he realized the 49ers were a much better team. And he felt that he could make them successful and that they had talent. So that's the reason why he went to the 49ers, and we see what's happened since.
And that's an interesting dynamic that was in play at this last game, was that the defensive coordinator for the Falcons is Mike Nolan. And really, the core of this team, the talent, was drafted under Mike Nolan. Mike Nolan, you know, he was a very poor head coach, but he was a very good talent evaluator. And he brought in Vernon Davis, Frank Gore, Patrick Willis, Justin Smith, Alex Smith, Joe Staley, really the guys that it's a good team. It's a good locker room. It's a mature team, good characters for the most part. And those guys all came in under Mike Nolan. And Harbaugh could recognize that and say, wow, there is a lot of talent that's going to waste here with the 49ers. And you couldn't really say the same thing about the Dolphins at the time.
The way I read the Harbaugh hiring
Mark Purdy.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The way I read the Harbaugh hiring was that Jed York went to Baalke and said, you know, I really think it would be a great idea if we hired Jim Harbaugh. And I think Baalke said, yeah, sure. I don't think Trent had no voice in it, but I think it was a Jed York driven hiring from the get-go. And Jed, being young, recognized, you know, he's trying to get the stadium built, and he knew what hiring a name like Harbaugh in the Bay Area would mean to people who might be thinking about buying tickets. And he was convinced Harbaugh was a really good coach, and he was going to make it happen no matter what. And I think the full credit for hiring Harbaugh goes to Jed.
Let me get another caller on, and Vince, that's you.
Hey, I'm a Ravens fan. And a big time
yes
Ray Lewis fan. Uh-huh. And I love what the Niners have done with their talent, but I think America loves a redemption story, and Ray Lewis is that story. He's a guy who was associated with some bad people. He could be very close to a murder, and yet he is ascended from that to be a person that we can love and respect. And that's what America, and I want them to beat the crap out of the Niners because I'm an Oakland Raider fan.
Wow.
All right. Well, I didn't
we just
realize
evolved.
KQED, yeah.
We just evolved into sports talk radio.
Yeah, I feel like KNBR is taking over here or something. Well, actually, someone would be who said, Krasny, why aren't we talking about the inauguration? And the truth of the matter is, I mean, after all, President Obama's laid out his next 4 years. Right. The inauguration is big news and so forth. Well, guess what? You know, we planned this program and we wanted to do it, especially after the excitement on Sunday. And I'm glad we did it, and we're doing it. We'll talk plenty about politics and about the next 4 years in days to come. You going to say something, Kevin?
Well, I think it's the Ray Lewis thing is fascinating. And there's a lot of people, who dislike Ray Lewis, and for good reason. And USA Today did an excellent story, if people want to log on to it, on Ray Lewis, on the victims' families.
Family, right.
Two people were stabbed and killed, and he was involved in some manner. He was convicted of obstructing justice. He was on probation. It was a misdemeanor charge. He was the only one charged in that case. He has not reached out to the families who had the victims' families. Ever since that time, however, he has been a very positive force in the NFL, done a lot of community stuff, been immensely positive. Roger Goodell, the commissioner, wants to hire him after he retires.
Roger Goodell, who probably would have suspended him if he'd been the commissioner at the time.
Well, he had to pay a big fine. The NFL fined him $250,000. But
well, we Americans do love these redemption stories.
We do. And maybe he deserves redemption. Maybe that's the case. I think it's very much on an individual basis how people view Ray
Lewis. Michael Vick deserve redemption?
We haven't seen what the story is there yet.
But I think a lot of people get turned off by Ray Lewis because he seems to think God is involved in his football success and his victories and the fact that he's in the Super Bowl. I mean, I think a lot of us have a hard time looking at Ray Lewis as a super role model. He has, I believe, 6 kids by 4 different women. And I mean, you know, there's a lot there. He's an interesting cat. He's an interesting story. But
There are a lot of football fans, though, who are very moved by Faith, as we saw with Tebow.
All of us who have heard guys say things and then behave in a different way, those of us who've covered sports for a very long time, you know, we look at this with a little bit of a skepticism. I mean, it's hard to swallow it hook, line, and sinker.
Look, Patrick Willis is also a man of faith. And in the locker room Sunday, he kind of went on about, you know, I always wondered why the 49ers drafted me because they didn't interview me before the draft. I never heard from him, and then all of a sudden I was drafted. But now I see God had this plan for me, and you never know what God – and he but I'm more inclined to believe Patrick Willis is sincere about that because of the way Patrick Willis has lived his life up to
Listen, excuse me, Mark. Miss Alabama said that God has a plan for her too, apparently, because of Brent Musburger. I mean, it's amazing how you can see God's plans.
Oh, and I bet we see her at Media Day at the Super Bowl.
That's right. I mean, you're basing your view – I mean, my favorite Ray Lewis story is Charles Woodson, the great defensive back now for the Packers, formerly for the Raiders. He's from – this is an Ohio story. He was from Cleveland.
He also played at Michigan, yeah.
Yeah, why'd you go to Michigan? He said, well, I was my mom didn't like the coach at Ohio State at the time, who was John Cooper. So I was between Miami, Florida, and Michigan for my choices. I said, why didn't you go to Miami instead of Michigan? He said, well, because I went down there. Ray Lewis was my recruiting host. He took me to a strip club. My mom found out, and she said, you're going to Michigan.
Sorry, let me get another caller on. From Menlo Park, John joins us. Hi, John.
Hi. Gee, I kind of feel a little bit bad after that last Raven fan caller who kind of went
just
nuts.
Watch your language.
But I kind of wanted to make a comment on a couple different things. Well, one thing, you guys already corrected that Ray Lewis was involved in a stabbing, not a shooting. The other was, you know, I am a Ravens fan, and I wanted to touch on the Modell topic. He has done a lot for the league, and it's my understanding that the main reason that the team left Cleveland was because the city would not build a new stadium. And once the team had left and the city did build a new stadium, they got a new team. So I don't always understand exactly why Art Modell is hated so much in Cleveland. And lastly, Michael, you mentioned that...
do you understand why Al Davis was hated so much for a while in Oakland? It's the same reason, basically.
Yeah, you know, you're right. And, you know, I'm a big Baltimore fan, so we had our team taken by the Colts, by Indianapolis, and I understand the emotions that go along with that. But the team got a new team the next season, I believe, Cleveland. So
not quite the team that the Ravens are.
No. That's true. That's very true. And the last comment I had to make was just about the fact that it's been 14 years that Ray Lewis has been turning his life around, and it is a great story. But you guys already mentioned, you guys already touched on that. So that's about it.
Well, we thank you for the call. And speaking of great stories, I mean, let's talk about Vernon Davis for a moment. I mean, that is a great story. It was quite a turnaround from, Anne, as you were saying, virtually being ignored.
Yeah, you know, Vernon, I think those of us who covered the team consider him probably the greatest talent on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, potentially. But he's been at times invisible. When Kaepernick took over his first start, they had a great chemistry in the Monday night game against the Bears. And then he just kind of disappeared. And he does get double-teamed a lot. And I don't think he and Kaepernick had chemistry for some reason. Kaepernick was always looking for Crabtree. But then this was, you know, this was an amazing breakout game. The Falcons did a pretty good job of containing Michael Crabtree. And Kaepernick, as Kevin Lynch pointed out, I mean, operating from the pocket as a passing quarterback on Sunday, he deserves even more credit than he did for what he did with his legs against Green Bay. I mean, he was just so savvy and able to find the open guy, and Vernon was open a lot.
Well, what about Manningham and all this, Kevin Lynch? I mean, it's a big loss, really, and you're not reading a lot about it.
It is a big loss. Kyle Williams, another receiver, injured his knee. He's out for the season. That's a big loss. And what Kaepernick is doing, he's covering up a glaring need on this team. They don't have a second receiver. Much more a third receiver. Randy Moss can only play half the snaps, if that, because he's an older player. So
and,
they don't have guys who can come in and fulfill those roles. So Kaepernick is making that up with his explosive plays, not only with his arms, but with his arm, but with his legs. And that's an amazing story.
And also something that should be pointed out is the 49ers used their number one draft pick on a receiver who has caught zero balls, A.J. Jenkins. And so as great as, like, say, the draft a year ago with Kaepernick and Alden Smith was, there are some questions about how they used their draft pick this year. And you know, that he hasn't contributed anything. So that's been kind of a black hole.
And I just wanted to interject one thing, quick thing on Vernon Davis. One of the reasons why Vernon Davis was open is because of, and we haven't talked about this yet, and hopefully it's not too much of an X's and O's thing, but they run this pistol offense, which they borrowed from college. And that pistol offense forces a defense to bring everybody up, corners, safeties, everybody is bunched up towards the line of scrimmage. That means you can't double team Vernon Davis. And Vernon Davis is very good when he's running away from you, either vertically or horizontally. And when he's doing that, he's very effective. So I think it's this pistol offense that is making him be open and be effective.
That's a good point. Let me get Ken on here, though. Ken, thanks for waiting. Join us, please.
Thank you. Because the Super Bowl is the biggest single event, sports or non-sports, which on an annual basis in the United States, that the betting handle on sports in legal and illegal gambling is fantastic, whether it's in Las Vegas or in your illegal book or in the mark the squares thing that gets handed around in offices. I'm wondering, because it's the only event that non-sports fans will watch year after year, they're looking for the big, obvious 800-pound gorilla connect-the-dots story. How are your writers going to get away from the brother versus brother thing? Because that's so played out. It was played out a minute after the game ended yesterday.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and that's one of the problems with the Super Bowl is that everything is played out. Everything's overhyped. And quite frankly, you know, those of us who have been covering the 49ers feel that this team is a little picked clean. I mean, that's not true. There's always stories. But, you know, we've been focusing solely on the 49ers pretty much ever since, you know, the Giants won their World Series championship. And we've had to do special sections and, you know, so there's it. It's one of the problems with this game is by the time that they actually kick off, people are kind of sick of everyone involved in it.
How are you planning to handle it, Mark Purdy? I know
you know, Anna's right.
Thanks, Mark.
You're welcome, Ann. But you know what? If we're doing our job, we ought to be able to find some other newer stories and maybe even newer ways to look at the Harbaugh brothers angle. The real problem is that I think we've written the Harbaugh brothers to death. I think we did it last year when they played each other. But your caller's correct in saying, you know, this is the biggest event, television event of the year, and a lot of people watch it that never watch football. And I was kind of joking early at the start, like, you mean there are two brothers playing? There are people who woke up Monday morning and went, why, you mean a minute? There are two brothers playing in this, and they have not read, you know, about this before or not really thought about it much before. And the balance you try to do as a media, like, well, you want to serve those people. Those are new readers for you, and you want to cultivate them. But you also don't want to bore the readers who know a lot about this before. It's a real challenge. I do believe this. I think the average fan and reader is not as interested in reading about the Harbaugh brothers as maybe we in the media will think they are. I think that they're interested in some of that, but the caller made another good point. You know, I've covered more than 30 of these things, and it seems to me the two biggest questions that people have are like, who's going to win, which means like, who should I bet on, and what's it like to be there. And so when I go cover one of these things, I try to keep those two things in mind.
But you know, there is so much hoopla and so much hype, and Kevin Lynch. So much at stake, really, too. You have to wonder, well, for example, let me ask you a question just about the game against the Falcons. They were down the 20-yard line at the end, and the quarterback, Matt Ryan, was hit pretty hard. And I wondered, in fact, if that played into the possibility that the 49ers were able to stop them from scoring another touchdown. In other words, what I'm getting at here is so much is at stake that there are players who, it's not just the Raiders who have this reputation, players who will play dirty because it's the whole ball of wax, you know. So I get a personal foul. If I hit the quarterback hard enough and do enough damage, then too bad. You know, we'll take the personal foul and the yardage.
Well, you know, it's really interesting you bring up that point, because that is something that is the NFL is struggling with, because they have 4,000 people suing them for concussions and post-concussion syndrome, and former players are involved. Most of them are former players. And the NFL is trying strenuously to change the culture of the game. So just what you just described does not happen. And we're seeing a lot of flags on hard hits in the secondary.
Well, excuse me. Look what happened with the New Orleans Saints, for example. I mean, isn't that a prime example of what I'm talking about?
Right. And that speaks to the culture of
this game.
This
is a coach giving more money for more injuries and that sort of thing.
And the game, I mean, when you talk to players, you go into locker rooms, the game is brutal. And brutal people play this game. And they... that is part of their persona on the field. And the NFL is trying to change this so players aren't injured and players don't have concussion symptoms after they leave the game. And it's a huge struggle right now and a huge battle. And I don't know what the results of it are going to be. But in 5-10 years, this game is going to change dramatically.
Well, they've got new helmets now, and if those new helmets are more have more efficacy to them, then you're going to see these lawsuits possibly come in like the horses come in. You know, a lot of money is going to go around to those concussions. I'm looking at a listener here, though, getting back to the stadium. Ann, you want to add something?
I just wanted to add, let's not forget that Jim Harbaugh has had an impact on the whole concussion story this year because he's made it made it very clear that you should never report self-reported concussion, as Alex Smith found out.
This is a listener who writes, San Francisco Stadium deal under Eddie D was contingent on revenue bonds from an adjacent restaurant shopping mall complex. Your guest, the revered Miss Killian, is right. Revered Miss Killian. despite voter approval, his future was cloudy. Don't forget the vote got lots of help from his willingness, voting booths and housing projects, burly poll workers wearing Niners gear, early voting disappeared voters.
That was an interesting vote.
Yeah.
Remember the post-game party? Remember that?
And that whole situation also led to the falling out between, at the time, team president Carmen Policy and Eddie DiPartolo, which in fact led to Eddie then relying more heavily on guys with poor judgment than Carmen that led to, I mean, it is a chain reaction.
it's
part of that family
saga.
It really is an amazing story.
You know, as long as we're talking about history here, listener Steve raises an interesting question. He says, the San Francisco Giants are baseball's reigning world champs. If the 49ers win the Super Bowl, they'll be football's champion team. When did that last happen in another city?
In 2004 in Boston. And please, San Francisco fans, do not become as obnoxious as Boston fans did in 2004. it's happened five other times.
Ditto to that,
And that's not even included. Remember in the Bay Area here in 89, the A's won and the 49ers won. So it's not even the first time in the Bay Area. I realize that San Francisco's its own kingdom on the hill there.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, San Francisco fans have their own distinctive, shall we say, signature as being fans and everything. And we have the 49ers faithful talking about the torture of the Atlanta game, just like they did about baseball games being torture and so forth. And there is a real culture here of fans, isn't there?
Well, I mean, the fans here have a reputation based on the past as being, you know, the white wine sippers and the cheese eaters and having the lovely tailgates. It's changed a lot. You know, Candlestick is a pretty gnarly place to go to right now. And it gives the Raiders, you know, the Oakland Coliseum a run for its money in terms of the way the fans behave and act in there. But I think that we are a fan base in general, and I'm not talking about the people inside the stadium, but we, you know, we like winners. We like people to win in a certain way. The 49ers used to always say winning with class. I think the Giants definitely embodied, you know, winning in a certain way that people could embrace. And if you're not winning, well, you know, we've got Mount Tam, we've got the ocean, we've got a lot of other things going on. So we're not going to live and die with you not winning, but the 49ers were really, really irrelevant for a long time there. I mean, it was amazing. It used to be you would go into a mall or a restaurant or somewhere on a Sunday when the 49ers were playing and the place was empty. But in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, that was not the case. People were not paying attention to the games. And now all of a sudden it's back to that, you know, must-see event.
Well, you know, and I think also, particularly with the 49ers, there's real intimate history with San Francisco and the 49ers. And the person who's most eloquent on this is Dianne Feinstein.
Yeah.
When the 49ers won the Super Bowl in 81, It was after Jonestown. It was after the assassination of George Moscone. And Harvey Milk. Thanks, Ann. And she felt that that was part of a healing process for this city. Maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. But I think since that time that the 49ers are a special team in that way. And I think they're embraced in a special way in this city and in the Bay Area.
I also want to make a special plea to echo what Ann said. If we do win the Super Bowl, that is we being the 49ers, let's not get too cocky about it. Remember, Freddie P. Soft is a character that plays a very important role here. That's Jim Harbaugh's character, the idea being can't get overconfident, can't get too cocky, and so forth. So let's make some predictions, as long as we have the three of you assembled here. You want to go first here, Mark Purdy?
No. I just got off the plane at midnight last night. I think the 49ers are the better team. I do think it'll be a close game, and I think that victory last year by the Ravens will be in Jim Harbaugh's head, and it's going to be really interesting to see how he game plans against his brother, and I'm looking forward to seeing the game for sure.
And Killian.
Well, I agree with Mark. I think the 49ers are the better team. I think they should win, but I do think that the one team in the NFL that can beat Jim Harbaugh is his brother John. I think it's a psychological matchup. And so I do think I think it'll be a close game.
Kevin Lynch.
I agree with Ann and Mark. I think it'll be close, and I think the 49ers will win it in the end. And, you know, this is a different team. Offensive line is much better for the 49ers this year than it was last year. So it's going to be a very interesting matchup and should be a compelling game.
Well, thank you, Kevin Lynch from SFGate.com and Killian from the San Francisco Chronicle and Mark Purdy from the San Jose Mercury News. Our thanks also to Bob Lang, Director of Public Relations from the San Francisco 49ers. We're going to meet John Mackey in the hour ahead, the CEO of Whole Foods. Stay tuned for all of us here at KQED. Actually, before I say for all of us here, Forum's produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer Amanda Stupai with online support from David Marks. And our senior editor is Don Zoll and executive producer Raul Ramirez. Now, for all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.